This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Thank you to the Sound Museum for another night of poppy music. And you are on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. This is Jim and I'm here with Steph and James, and we have a new intern co-host tonight, Rory. Hello, Rory.
Hello.
And we'll find out more about you in a minute. And we have in the studio with us tonight Kent Burgess from Victorian AIDS Council, who's going to talk to us about... He, along with some other people, are going to talk to us about domestic violence and family violence in the LGBTI community. And earlier today, Steph, you and I interviewed Kai Noonan from ACONS.
Yes. So she is the director or coordinator of the Family Violence... I'm going to get the title wrong. Domestic and Family Violence Projects at ACON in New South Wales. And they deliver a whole range of services to the LGBTI community and do really, really great work. So we will be hearing that interview later in the show.
So welcome, Kent.
Thank you, Jim. Good to be here.
And first thing we're going to do is we're going to find out more about Rory.
Oh.
Rory, come on. Spill the beans. Tell us about yourself.
Well, at the moment, I volunteer with Minus 18, so I work as a standout coordinator.
That means you're a Minus 18, aren't you?
Yes, I'm also still interning with the Safe Schools Coalition Australia, so working with two camps, doing quite similar things, and I am basically doing workshops and talks and presentations in schools, and I'm really passionate about radio, and I think it's another way to reach more people and talk about issues that are super important. So, yeah, I decided to intern here too.
and you luckily enough struck us.
Yeah, exactly.
That should be fun. James, how are you tonight?
Yes, very well, as always, Jim. Taking charge of all the music for you.
You are, and you're pushing the buttons and doing all those sorts of things. We want to welcome Kent Burgess from Victorian AIDS Council here tonight. Ken, can you give us a bit of a rundown about what the AIDS Council is doing about this issue? And
sure. So, as listeners would know, VAC's been in the space for a long time of working with gay men, and over the last 3 or 4 years, we've been really expanding much more into working across the LGBTI community. So that's about looking out for the well-being of all our community, where we see gaps, and working with other partners in the LGBTI sector. And since 2003, VAC has run a program called Revisioning, which is to work with the perpetrators of intimate partner and family violence amongst gay and MSM relationships. And more recently, we've been working with a coalition of partners to look at the issues around family and intimate partner violence that apply across the diversity of LGBTIQ relationships, because there's a massive lack of services in this area. There's no other programs formally running for gay men and intimate partner and family violence, and some of our partner organisations do small amounts of work, but it's unfunded, just like the work that we do in this space, because we know that the community has a great need for some specialist programs in this area. And we've had a big opportunity in the last 12 months through the Royal Commission into Family Violence to stand up and have a voice, and that's really brought the sector together.
So did the VAC make a submission to the Royal Commission?
We did. We made a submission to the Royal Commission into Family Violence in partnership with Drummond Street Services, that also does a lot of work in this space, because we realised that, you know, we're not experts. In fact, very few people are experts in the space of working with same-sex intimate partner violence, because there's just no programs out there to become expert in.
You were saying about, I guess, working with the offenders, and I'm interested like what people's stories are. When people go through these programs, have you had success? Do people understand, I guess, what's the path that brought them there and what happens next? Do you have any good, I guess, good news stories or good examples?
I mean, there's always good news stories as well. And I think what we've found through running the revisioning program over many years is that everyone has their own story. And when you're working with same-sex relationships, the concept of kind of victim and perpetrator can be quite complex. You know, society's kind of used to seeing domestic violence as something that heterosexual men do to women, and what we find is therefore there's an invisibility that many of the men that come to our programs have experienced, and that extends to the fact that often they have not identified themselves as being perpetrators of violence until that has, you know, been pointed out through some other contact with services or with the justice system. So what we see is a lot of people that are actually come to us wanting to address the issue. It's a voluntary program, so people come with wanting to gain insight into their issues. And we also see that the more that men open up in the group, the more we discover that that relationship between victim and perpetrator is that many of our perpetrators of domestic and intimate partner violence are also victims of family violence themselves.
And I think that's one of the really interesting things, because in one of my past lives, when I had policy responsibility for this area in New South Wales, what we continually found was that virtually 100% of perpetrators in any sort of violence, whether it was domestic violence or child abuse, about 100% of perpetrators had been victims. But the really interesting issue was that 100% of victims don't become perpetrators. And so there was quite a lot of work to be done and research being funded into why, what were the characteristics of resilience that some people were able to bring to their lives, which meant that they didn't turn into perpetrators, and could that in fact be used, that knowledge be used to develop programs for perpetrators.
Mm. What we've found is that because VAC's revisioning program has not been formally funded as under the Victorian model of a men's behaviour change program, and there's a system of government funding in Victoria to men's behaviour change programs that's very rigid as a treatment model, and that has precluded people coming when they want to intervene early in their own behaviour. So what we find, because we have more freedom in revisioning, because it's funded by VAC itself, is that we actually have that opportunity to intervene in early in people's experiences as perpetrators of violence. So we do see some of those good news stories where people gain insight, turn relationships around and change their behaviour. But I also have to acknowledge that this is an area where very little long-term research has been done in terms of when we work with perpetrators of violence, regardless of whether it's in heterosexual or queer relationships. There's very little evidence within the Australian context to say what happens, you know, 2 years down the track from that program.
We do have to go to some messages, but if you want to have your say, you can SMS on 0427JOY949, that's 0427569949, or email onair@joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9 has a huge range of programs available for podcast. In fact, Joy is one of the largest podcasting communities on community radio. If you haven't checked out our podcasting service, you're missing out. Visit joy.org.au, click on the podcast tab, and you'll find a list of Joy programs regularly sharing the best interviews, news and reviews. There's tens of thousands of hours for you to enjoy, so check it out now. Joy.org.au.
Connect connecting, representing, celebrating. Joy 94.9.
Hello, you are listening to Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. You're in the studio with Steph, Jim, James, Rory, and our first guest for this evening, Kent Burgess from the Victorian AIDS Council. And we are talking about intimate partner violence in the LGBTI community. So we were talking a little bit before about the program you're running, supporting particularly men who have been perpetrators of violence?
Absolutely. So our current program is working just with men, although in partnership with Drummond Street Services. In the future, we hope to expand that out.
I was also interested to know whether of the prevalence in the gay community, because you were saying that often there are very few or very little programs that are actually, designed or targeted to our community. What are we aware, or do we only just starting to understand about the prevalence of domestic violence in our community?
Well, the short answer is that we don't know exactly, because there's not a lot of research that has been done. La Trobe University did a study in 2008 called the Coming Forward Study, and they found that by self-report that up to one-third of lesbians and gay men reported that they had experienced verbal or physical abuse within intimate relationships.
Wow. So is that even higher than the general population?
So that would be higher than the general population. So it's speculation to say that it's higher across the board, but certainly most of the research and policy and advocacy in this area does say that it's higher, particularly when we factor in family violence. So that would include the violence that's experienced between siblings and from parents to children, and that of course is often driven by homophobia or transphobia. And a piece of research that was done in New South Wales showed that up to 25% of the sample of 600 young trans and gender diverse identifying people identified that they'd experienced verbal or physical abuse in the home. So these are pretty stark and startling figures, and this is why we're really using the opportunity of the Family Violence Royal Commission to call out the government on the need for services in this area, and we think that they're listening.
Yeah, so you do think they'll be forthcoming? Is that the hope?
Yeah, we're really hopeful, and we've had really good listening ears from government and trying to look at solutions and opportunities in this space.
And who, and Jim may know this, who is the responsible minister or ministers for family violence and for these, I suppose it is broader than that as well, mental health.
In Victoria it is, it's the Minister for Community Services, I think it's Jenny Markakis, isn't it?
That's right, yeah, Family and Community Services, Jenny Markakis, and we also would have a relationship, it goes across health and justice, and also in this space, of course, our Minister for Equality, who you've had on the show recently.
Last week. Yeah. Has the issue been raised on the Ministerial Advisory Committee on Justice?
Yes, it has. And I can't give you any more details on that because I don't know it. But certainly as part of the Royal Commission, they held specific sessions and roundtables on LGBTI family violence, and both the Minister for Women and our Minister for Equality were really engaged in that conversation.
And as you'll hear in a minute when we talk to Kai Noonan, ACON has been working with a national helpline called 1-800-RESPECT. And working, and apparently they now have a section on their website about LGBTIQ domestic violence. Has VAC managed to plug itself into the national sort of network of services?
Certainly, some of the conversations we've been having with partners in this on this issue include QLife and our very own switchboard in Victoria, who are really, really keen to get more training in this space and to be able to have a dedicated response to our community members that contact them and for them to have a role, in fact, in being a specialist contact point for members of our queer community who want to talk about experiences of intimate and family partner violence.
I know you talked about how you're going to expand from like the gay, like just having gay men like services. What is available at the moment for people who identify as trans and gender diverse?
So obviously it's an area where there's a lot of gaps and not much happening. So VAC has just started a trans and gender diverse health and wellbeing service, and that includes a GP program, and we're soon to start counselling services attached to that. So that's something that's available. In terms of specific to family violence, people who identify as trans or gender diverse can access counselling services through VAC, and also some of our partners like Drummond Street Services in Carlton and through their other offices throughout the north and west do a lot of really, really good work working with LGBTI people, including trans people, around family and intimate partner violence, and they're really experienced, and they have a lot of queer identifying people on staff as well.
And what about access to, do you provide any access to shelters at all for throughout your program?
So you've hit one of the big issues on the head is that there is no specific emergency housing or accommodation for LGBTIQ people in Victoria, and certainly none for those experiencing violence at home or in their relationships. It's a massive gap.
So are there any services that are sympathetic, do you find, or are they all sort of religiously based and just turning people away because they can under the Equal Opportunities Act?
They're certainly not all religiously based, and there are some services that will bend over backwards to do the right thing, but often they don't know what they don't know, and people's experiences is very hit and miss. And often if you go to a crisis accommodation service as a trans or queer identifying person, you can be the one that has to provide the education to that worker, and when you're at your most vulnerable, that is not something that you should have to do.
And I think that what we would like to do is to provide some opportunity for people out there who may be thinking about this issue, and it is a difficult issue because often I think people don't like to identify themselves as being victims or perpetrators. But there are a number of places where you can actually go for help. There is the Victorian AIDS Council service here. What is the phone number for that, Ken?
It's 9865 6700.
So 9865 6700.
And that's a 9-to-5 number.
And you can, of course, also call Switchboard, which is 1-800-184-527. And that's for anything you might want to talk about, anything within the LGBTI community, or Q Life, which is 1-800-184-527. That's the same number. That's because they've merged.
They've really merged. And then there's the national helpline, which is 1-800-RESPECT. I don't know what those numbers are. You'll have to look on your phone that's got numbers against its letters and work out what RESPECT is. There's also the non-specific helplines like Lifeline 1-3-11-14 and Beyond Blues 1-300-224-636, which at least may be able to refer you on to other services.
And we do have to finish up in just a second, but I was wondering if you had any messages for our listeners about, I guess, how they can help reduce violence in our community?
I guess one of the big issues is the invisibility of violence within same-sex and gender-diverse families and relationships. So give people the opportunity to talk to you. If you see it as a friend, then in a sensitive way, give people the opportunity to talk.
What are the signs?
Well, it's often the same signs that might mean that something else is seriously wrong or stressing that individual or that relationship. So you're looking for people who are you know, anxious or low in mood, or who are perhaps not behaving in the usual way, not keeping appointments with you as a friend or as another family member, people that are often trying to cover up and don't seem to be able to kind of account for their time or usual schedule, people that are just behaving out of character. But it's always that thing that, you know, we all need to support each other in the community and give people an opportunity to shout out. And when they do speak to us, we need to listen and act and go to QLive, come to VAC, go to one of the other agencies and talk about what the best way forward is for that person.
And once again, of course, all the physical access to those services, apart from the phone numbers, most of them are in a city, aren't they?
Well, for example, Drummond Street Services offer services for out in the north and out into some of the northern suburbs. But, yeah, most of the services within community are city-based. But certainly QLife have a network of sensitive councillors within community they can connect you up with if you're not Melbourne-based. And otherwise, you can ring and get phone support from organisations like VAC and QLife.
Good. Thank you very much, Kent. I think that's been very informative about what's available for Melbourne listeners or for Victorian listeners, and we will hear more about what's available for other people in the next segment.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
So, tonight we're doing a show all about family violence in the LGBTIQ community because we think it's something that is important and it's something that we should talk about. And we know that one of the barriers to reporting is that
No one talks about it.
A, because they might feel ashamed, or B, they might not, see themselves in some of the conversations, which are largely about, as we've said before, heterosexual men and heterosexual women.
So, and most of the family violence that goes on in our community is portrayed in a heteronormative way in the media, where it is talked about. So the most public person around family and domestic violence in Australia over the past couple of years has been Rosie Batty, and that's definitely a matter of heteronormativity and of child abuse.
And she does amazing, excellent work.
She did fabulous work. She just raised the stakes dramatically for everybody. And the queer community needs to rise up to it and meet it.
So this is us rising. Rising and meeting. We have been chatting with Kent Burgess from VAC, but we are now going to play an interview that Jim and I did earlier this evening with Kai Noonan, who's the coordinator of domestic and family violence projects at ACON in New South Wales. So we have an interstate perspective, and she's been working in the field a really long time. So here's Kai. Tonight on the show, we're focusing on domestic and partner violence in the LGBTI community. How common is it? Do we have that information?
Yeah, look, available evidence suggests that people in our communities are as likely as non-LGBTIQ women to experience domestic and family violence. So that's about one in three who have actually come out and said that they've experienced it in past or present relationships.
Is that across both genders? Is that across lesbians and gay men?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad that you said that, because in particular when it comes to transgender people and people with intersex variations, there currently just isn't enough data. The limited data that we do have indicates very high levels of abuse, and for transgender people it's possibly even up to 70% who have experienced it before. And then on top of that, we also have the problem of underreporting from LGBTIQ victims and just a general invisibility of the issue, making it harder for victims and survivors of abuse to come forward with their stories. So we believe it reflects what's happening in non-LGBTIQ women.
I know it's hard to, have this information when there's not a lot of data available, but I suppose anecdotally, do you have any idea why rates are higher among transgender women? Is it transphobia? Do we have any indications of what's leading to those high rates?
So it seems to be transgendered men and women. when we look at the national debate and the national discussion around domestic violence, they tend to take a gendered argument. I think we can use that gendered argument, so saying that, yes, in mainstream society, men and women are not equal. And what that comes down to is the fact that we do live in a patriarchal society, and part of patriarchy can include homophobia and transphobia as well. So if we're looking at those added dynamics that lead to violence in relationships, then ultimately, I guess, transgender people and people with intersex variations would experience violence at higher rates. Plus, then you look at people may be more vulnerable when they're transitioning. They may be, I guess, closeted about their gender or their transgender status. So all of these elements can be used by an abuser against the victim.
Mm. I've also heard that sometimes it can be difficult for transgender or gender diverse people to get support and particularly access to shelters. Is that something you find with the people you work with as well?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, many religious-based organisations have exemptions from the Anti-Discrimination Act, and that means that they can flat out certain people from their services. Also, many services are just not safe or appropriate for gender-diverse people.
I remember my days, yeah. Kai, when I was a senior executive in New South Wales Health, that we had big complaints from the lesbian and gay community because New South Wales Rape Crisis Centre wouldn't take calls from men who claimed to have been raped or from transgender women because they weren't women so on. So there was a lot of trans and homophobia around in the mainstream services which were being run by groups that you wouldn't necessarily expect there to be that sort of response. So I just wonder, do you have better relationships with those services these days?
Yeah, I mean, they are absolutely improving. 1-800-RESPECT, for example, is the national hotline and online counselling service and information service around for domestic violence. I've been doing a bit of work with them recently, and they're doing a lot of hard work to make their services more inclusive. And I've had similar conversations with a lot of other organisations as well, so it is slowly changing. But again, we do live in a society which is heteronormative, and that's the battle that we have.
This might be too technical, but I'm just wondering about, you were saying before about some organisations legally being able to discriminate, and I know that there were changes made to the Federal Sex Discrimination Act that protect transgender people. Is that something that I guess might help, create either challenge transphobia or create an environment where there's a higher expectation of inclusion? Do we know that yet?
Yeah, I go to a lot of meetings with other service providers, and there are changes. I'm not sure what that growing change is. I think it's, to be honest, the grassroots movements and the conversations and the representation of LGBTIQ people in the media that pushes for that change. I believe that legislation is a little bit further behind at the moment, because as far as I'm concerned, there shouldn't be any exemptions from the Anti-Discrimination Act.
You won't get an argument from us for that.
Yes. yes, and I suppose just to clarify for listeners, this is one area where the legislation is a bit different in Victoria compared to New South Wales, because in Victoria we have the Equal Opportunity Act that does have some exemptions, hopefully not for much longer, but I think it's more comprehensive in some areas than the Sex Discrimination Act.
Yeah, and I do apologise. I am very New South Wales biased.
Oh, no, that's all right.
And that I have.
Well, one would expect you to be, since you're working up there.
It's good to get diversity. We would like to hear from people around the country and beyond on our show as well.
Kai, can I just come back to you about the 1-800-RESPECT number? Is that a number that is available for people in our communities to call now, and will they get good service if they do call it?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Look, you do get individual counsellors when you do call up. If you don't speak to somebody that you think is inclusive or is understanding, you can always ask for somebody else as well. But even if you access their website, they have an LGBTIQ tab where they have extra information, and they talk about some of the extra complexities of violence within our communities. So you should be able to get a much better service than you may have gotten 10 years ago. So
listeners, if you are in New South Wales at the moment, you should call ACON if you have any issues in this. And what's your number at ACON where they should call you, Kai?
It's 9206-2091.
And in Victoria, it's the VAC's counselling service that should be called, and there are rape crisis centres in both states and in the other states as well. So, you know, I'd encourage anybody who has questions or issues around this to make sure that they do contact a service, because contacting the service does another thing too, and that's that it adds to the data. And that's a really, really important step for everybody to take.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely, because we know that people in our communities are underreporting the issues of LGBTIQ violence, and they tend to access support from friends and family rather than services. And that's a hurdle that we're trying to jump over as well.
This Joy program has a podcast, and you can subscribe to it at joy.org.au.
Hi, Jason Gipps here, Joy 94.9 Production Manager. Want to learn more about radio or audio editing? We're often looking for people to join our team as program production audio producers, responsible for producing podcasts just like this one. Get involved, meet new people and learn new skills. Join one of the biggest community radio contributors of podcasts by volunteering for Joy's program production team. All skill levels welcome, no prior knowledge of audio production is required, and best of all, training is free for all Joy members. Keep an eye on the volunteer vacancies page at joy.org.au, and if we're looking for people to join our team, it'll tell you how to get involved right there. The Joy 94.9 program production team, powering Joy podcasts. Any show, any time. Online at joy.org.au.
You're on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9, and as you can hear, we're talking about partner and domestic violence, or domestic and family violence in the queer community. And we just heard Kai Noonan, the first part of an interview that we did with Kai Noonan this afternoon. And Kai is from ACON and is the coordinator of their family and domestic violence projects there. And she's funded by the New South Wales government and has been for just over a year. And we have in the studio with us Kent Burgess, who's the Director of Services at the Victorian AIDS Council. And one of the services that VAC offers is through their counselling service, is a domestic violence counselling line. And Kent, you listen to Kai's interview then, in between chatting to us, who might not have heard any of it for all I know, but does the sort of things that she was talking about ring true with you?
Oh, absolutely, Jim. And look, I love the fact that she emphasised the fact that this is something that people don't speak about or often recognise for themselves. And she ended with the fact that there's a massive underreporting within community, and people tend to just go to friends or people that they can trust. So what we need to do is build as a community, is build in services that people can trust. In fact, we need to be able to educate the rest of the family violence sector. We need to educate the justice system, and we need to educate the police, so that those people that are members of our community who need to reach out should be able to trust those people to give the appropriate response, and to be able to understand that violence happens in all sorts of relationships.
And Rory, I want to ask you a question from the minus 18 perspective. Do you get through minus 18 any evidence of partner and domestic violence, you know, like from families and siblings and things like that?
It's really interesting because it's like on a like personal level, yes, we get a lot of, obviously with homophobia and transphobia, it's quite rampant still. And often we get like family violence or stories of people who've experienced it, and people that I know have been kicked out of home for coming out as trans or being gay, and often want to leave those situations anyway, and are often left a bit struggling because they don't have any services to kind of go for help, and they don't actually know where to go. And it's a massive problem for young people to recognise when they are victims and perpetrators of domestic violence, as you've said. And I think for young people kind of recognising that and knowing where to get help, it can be quite overwhelming because we're just not talking about it at all. It's definitely something I think we should improve on.
That's true, and often that very vulnerable cohort of younger people who are dealing with so many other issues at that time of life, who then end up dropping out of schooling and all sorts of other poor outcomes because of that family violence situation. And they're also, because as we talked about, there's no specific housing support options for them, they end up crowd surfing with friends or they end up homeless.
And of course they are looking to older people like us to provide them with information and assistance, and unless we know about it, we can't do that. So we'll go back to our interview with Kai.
And we're going to go to the second part of the interview with Kai. If you've just tuned in, we've been chatting with Kai Noonan, who's Coordinator of Domestic and Family Violence Services at ACON, and you are on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Something else I wanted to ask you about was, I suppose, the public conversation about family and domestic violence in Australia more broadly. And we've seen an increase in the number of people talking about it. Sort of, it's becoming more mainstream through the work of people like Rosie Batty and also the White Ribbon Movement. Do you think that LGBTIQ people have been included in this narrative? What's been the response of people you work with, or have they been excluded? What's the feeling?
Yeah, I mean, I thank Rosie Batty because I agree there's definitely been a much greater national attention paid to the issue of domestic and family violence in recent years. The majority of the reports that I've read, there has been some acknowledgement of a lack of data and services for certain at-risk groups, which ours is known as. But even then, there isn't any real proposed measures to address the issue. In saying that, however, last year the New South Wales government granted funding for my work here at ACON to run the domestic and family violence project. So governments are starting to pay attention to the issue, and hopefully awareness and public discussion will increase. But in saying that, there still is definitely not enough conversation about it, and not enough in our communities as well.
So in New South Wales, there used to be the New South Wales Council on Violence Against Women, and they actually sponsored quite a lot of research about domestic violence, as it was then known. And do you get access to those? Is there a research bank does the council still exist, and do you get access to their research?
We do. We get included in a lot of committees, and we do get sent a lot of research, and we get invited to both statewide and national summits to be included in the research and in forward planning and future planning. But again, when any of this happens, you know, it's usually myself or maybe one other person involved in these committees and in these discussions. So it is still greatly underrepresented. But we do have access to the information that's out there, and we are starting to be included in broader discussions.
You talked before about the barriers, some of the barriers to reporting. What are the other reasons that people might not report?
Yeah, again, I think we briefly talked at the start about, I guess, homophobia and transphobia, and sadly, we do live in a homophobic and transphobic world. A lot of LGBTIQ people are just not comfortable talking openly about their gender and sexuality at all, let alone talking about abuse within those relationships to police and to total strangers. I think many people in our communities do not want to come out about their gender and sexuality, or maybe they're afraid that reporting will out them, especially in rural or remote areas. I think a lot of us do have good reason to fear discrimination, and we don't want to draw attention to our gender or our sexuality. And it may take time for us to trust that police, courts and service providers will not treat us differently, and that our relationships and our issues will be taken seriously.
Kai, there is, I mean, what you're talking about there really puts an onus, doesn't it, back on friends and colleagues and so on to watch for the signs of domestic violence. And I do recall being told of lesbians who had attended emergency departments of hospitals a number of times with broken ribs and, you know, black eyes and obvious signs that anyone else would have gone, oh, there's domestic violence, but because they identified as lesbians, they were never asked the questions. They were never given the screening tool.
Yeah.
So what are some of the signs that people should be on the watch out to make sure that their friends are not talking? Because there will be cases where people we know will be, and you not, might know both partners in a relationship, you might want to believe that it's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is still that idea, and I think, you know, I'm probably guilty of it myself, where we think, oh, women can't abuse or men can stand up for themselves and just fight back, and breaking through those stereotypes that we have is one of our big issues. So I'm actually glad you mentioned it. But in general, looking out for violence with any of our friends or family or colleagues, I guess looking out for changes in how they act, whether they look afraid or uncomfortable around their partner or their family member. Do they get dozens of texts and phone calls? Are they told what to do, how to act? Generally, has someone you know lost their confidence? Because it's not always the physical violence. Sometimes the physical violence is easier to spot. It's often the psychological abuse, the emotional abuse, the sexual assaults. That's what is a lot harder to spot. But if you're not sure, just ask your friend.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Hey, this is Jane Lynch, and you're listening to Australia's gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Hello, you are listening to Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. That was part of an interview that Jim and I did with Kai Noonan from ACON. We still have a little bit left of that interview to play, but we're going to save it for another week because I think it's a very important topic, which is domestic violence in the LGBTIQ community, and we're going to continue not next week, perhaps the week after that. But I also have another message from ACON, which was about the support that they provide to other organisations to become more LGBTIQ inclusive. It's called Pride in Diversity, and they've Kai's been working with shelters, including women's shelters and other little not-for-profits providing services to the communities to try to make them more inclusive. So you can get in contact with them. They're national, so regardless of where you are in the country, if you work for a non-for-profit and you think they could do with a bit of inclusivity boosting, then get in contact with
ACON. And Pride and Diversity has been a sponsor of Joy for some time.
Good on them. Yes, we have pride in diversity.
Mind you, I could be rude here, but
I'm going to restrain
myself. And
quick, ask a respectful question to
We do have it with us still in the studio, Kent Burgess, who's the Director of Services at the Victorian AIDS Council. And I wanted to ask Kent just something quickly about a new service that opened this week, and that is the trans GP at the centre clinic.
So what we've started this week is a trans health and wellbeing service, which initially is our GP, and will also be joined by counselling and other wraparound holistic services for trans and gender diverse folks. And that's actually operating out of our Fitzroy site, which is the facility that we operate Pronto out of.
And that opened today, I believe.
That's right. So today was the first day that we saw clients in that transgender clinic, and people can make appointments for that service on our Pronto website, www.pronto.org.au, and that'll be every Monday and Thursday initially, and then we're hoping to expand.
Mm, that's very exciting. I think that's a nice positive note to end on. So thank you so much for chatting with us tonight,
Thanks
Kent.
Thanks for coming in, Kent, and staying the whole hour.
Yes, thank you very much. And thank you. Thank you to Kai Noonan from ACON for chatting with us earlier this evening. Thank you, Jim and James and Rory.
Thank you, Steph.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you again next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.